The nice thing about this week's episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, we have, like, good stuff to talk about.
Well, for once.
It feels like it's been a while.
Yes, it has.
We've had, like, fun, good, entertaining topics to discuss. And not even, like, you know, there's, like, actual, just, like, not drama necessarily, but, like, real topics. Not just, like, well, the offense continues to struggle.
Ian Desmond playing better.
Pat Valaika's back at first base. Which, Pat Valaika is back at first base. What's going
on? He's back at first base a lot now, which is not great.
Not ideal. But hey, it's a relatively good week of baseball. A very good week of baseball.
In fact.
Fun, in fact. Your Colorado Rockies, as we welcome you into this week's episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, I'm Tyler Maughan.
And I'm Anthony Masterson. Very hot, Anthony Masterson.
Yeah, very hot, it sounds like, Anthony Masterson.
It is 114 degrees here in the valley in Reseda, California. And my AC in my new house decided to crap out last night.
Cool.
And the next time they can get here to fix it, tomorrow morning between 10 and 1.
On the hottest day in Los Angeles history.
Potentially the hottest day in LA history.
This is episode number 140, which coincidentally is the same temperature at Anthony's house right now.
That's not untrue.
It's very fitting.
Yeah,
really exciting stuff. Well,
but over the last week, the Rockies have now won 6 of 7. They're back over 500.
Swept the San Francisco Giants. Brought out the saltiest tweets from Giants fans that we have ever seen. It was fun. That was a fun series. I was there on the 4th of July, the 10th 1-0 win at Coors Field in franchise history. That game was fun as hell, man.
Yeah, then the only game that they lost in that time was the game that I attended, Sunday in L.A.
Blame Anthony. Hashtag blame Anthony.
Yeah, whatever. I get it. I still have not seen the Rockies win at Dodger Stadium, I'm pretty sure.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, now we know. We'll tweet at them the next time they're in Los Angeles to make sure that you're not allowed in.
Yeah, that's fair. I get it.
They can hand off, like, your picture, your headshot to the people at the gates. Don't let this man in. Ever.
But the Dodgers fans would. They'd be like, yeah, come on in.
Yeah, that's true. That's
guaranteed
true. That's
victory.
Point. That's a good point. Blame Anthony. The only one that they've lost is Anthony was there. They have not lost much lately. They struggled through that series in San Francisco. Wasn't a great series. But they go on the road to Los Angeles, win the first two. They dropped the finale, and it was a frustrating one. But then they come home. Well-pitched games. They limit the San Francisco Giants to 3 runs on 12 hits over 3 games, which was the second lowest total for any team visiting Coors Field in a 3-game series in the history of the ballpark. The only lower total, I think it was the 2002 Pittsburgh Pirates, you retweeted this, 2 runs on 7 hits over 3 games at Coors Field in 2002.
And those 0-2 Pirates,
God.
Boy, were they a team.
They were loaded. Remember how bad the Pirates, remember like when we were kids,
the
and
Pirates were a laughingstock.
You'd get video games, and you would always pick out the worst teams to play in. Like, I remember when I was little, and I would get a new football game, I'd play the Colts all the time, because the Colts
you wanted
were
a challenge.
Joke.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, like, you just wanted to go out and beat somebody's brains in. So I'd always, like, pick the Colts for a football game, and it was usually, like, the Pirates for a baseball game, because, you know, like, when you're playing with the Rockies were probably the team that everybody else picked. They
well,
would buy games.
But at the same time, the Rockies on video games were really good because they could score like hell.
That's true, because they could always score. And you were in control of the pitching, so
right.
It could be better.
No, the Pirates didn't have a single winning season from 1993 to 2013.
That's insane. Which I think was the longest stretch of sub-500 seasons in American professional sports history. Major professional sports history.
I mean, that's a lot of seasons.
Woof. Woof. Those 0-2 Pirates, they were loaded. And the 2018 San Francisco Giants, bad at Coors Field this week, and God, it was glorious. 5-2 win in the opener on the second, 8-1 win in the second game of the series on the third, and that 1-0 win in 2 hours and 15 minutes with a 17-minute rain delay on the fourth. It was amazing. The fireworks were fantastic. And now the Rockies go on the road to the American League Rockies, the Seattle Mariners, who've been one of the best teams in baseball all season. This on Twitter, I'm very excited for this series, and we'll talk about the last week coming up here in a little bit, but I'm very excited for this series because this is going to be like a bunch of Canadians going against each other, and how polite and gracious we are with Mariners Twitter. I'm
gonna be
very
like-
excited to just exchange compliments for the next 3 months.
Nolan, it's a home run. Oh, sorry.
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 Sorry about that. Sorry
oh,
about
Nelson
that.
Oh, Nelson Cruz goes deep. Oh, sorry.
Sorry. Sorry about that. Ah, it was a good 2-1 game there, eh? In the 10th.
Sorry.
Eh? but I'm very excited for the series because I think it's going to be fun to interact with Mariners. Hopefully things go well with the Rockies or else we'll just end up being bitter. I think because this has been the stretch in recent weeks for the Rockies. The Rockies lost 5 straight from that frustrating series finale in Cincinnati on June 7th to the first game of the series at Philadelphia on June 12th. Then they won a game, lost a game, won a game. Then they lost 3 more straight. Then they won 4 in a row against the Mets and the Marlins, and then promptly lost 4 in a row. And now they have since won 6 of 7. So it's been kind of this boomerang back and forth around the 500 mark. They're now back to a game over 500 of 44 and 43 going into the series. But you're kind of, when they're alternating like a win, a loss, 2 wins, 2 losses, whatever, that's something. But when they win 4 straight, it's like, yeah, they're getting it figured out. And then they lose 4 straight. Now they've won 6 of 7. And then it's like they get Seattle and Arizona and Seattle.
But they're 3.5 back right now. Yeah. I mean, they were, what, 8 back near the end of June?
They came into the month of June in first place. And, yeah, I think they left at 8.5 back. Something like that.
And here they are, 3.5 back now. Like, it's, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility. They're 3.5 back in the division, 4.5 back in the wild card.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
and you get a chance to play some good teams. You play the D-backs next week, chance to gain some ground there. You're playing better at home, but it's the starting pitching that's finally really been galvanizing this team as of late, and that's been the most heartening thing to see. And the irony is that the starting pitching has been at its best without arguably their best pitcher.
Yep.
In John Gray.
Yeah. So
that's what we call a segue in the business.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
So the Rockies last week sent John Gray down to AAA, and the discussion surrounding John Gray all season has been toxic and obnoxious. And the move, I think, validates the hot take crowd of John Gray is not an ace and he's terrible and whatever. The story is vastly more complicated than that. And Ben Lindbergh did a story for The Ringer last week in which he laid out the argument on John Gray and how John Gray is historically basically unprecedented in baseball as being somebody who simultaneously seems so brilliantly good and also so terribly bad statistically.
And both sides are right, and that's the thing.
Exactly, and that's what's so frustrating, is there's like no way to make an actual delineation on whether or not John Gray is good but snake-bitten or bad but lucky in moments where it's not high leverage. John Gray, what I think it boils down to most, and we've talked about this, is that John Gray is great except for when he gets caught in tight spots. When he is in the worst possible moment to break down is when he breaks down most. And that is what has led to where his numbers are at this stage of the season and the reason why he's in AAA. To me, I got a text from one of my best friends who was just hired as the head softball coach at the University of Minnesota Crookston. Congratulations to Travis Owen, my best friend since we were like 4 years old. So Trav, being a coach, is fascinated by the coaching and managerial and kind of the sports management, sports psychology side of what it takes to manage athletes. And he and I had discussions about, he said one time he coached a player who she sort of had the same issues as John Gray, where she was brilliant except for when there were runners on and it was tough spots. And he said what I started doing with her was I ignored everything mechanical and we just focused on competitiveness, your emotions in the moment, being able to be locked in and be focused and be competitive and throw your best stuff and blah blah blah. And we were talking about kind of that in relation to John Gray, because his stuff is obviously brilliant when he is a guy who wants to put his best stuff out there. And he has said, like, I just don't make competitive pitches in competitive moments. You can't have that from your frontline guy. And Travis asked me, he said, do you think that this is the right move, sending him down? And I said no, because I don't think it's the right move. I think if what you want from John Gray is he has to figure out how to be competitive in these big moments, how is he going to learn that going against the El Paso Chihuahuas?
That's,
you know what I mean?
Thing.
That's what I don't get. And maybe there has been, and this is, you always have to couch things with this. We don't know what's gone on behind the scenes. The Rockies may have given John Gray a month of, all right, try to get this figured out in these big game situations. Try to get it figured out at the major league level. If you don't, we'll reevaluate. Maybe we'll send you to Albuquerque for a while. If that's the case, then I understand the move a little bit more. But I think if John Gray sat down with Jeff Breidich and Bud Black and they said, here's the situation. Right now, you're too much in your own head. We're going to send you down to Albuquerque. We're going to let you kick some ass in AAA for a little while, and we'll see you after the All-Star break. That, to me,
get some confidence back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that's probably, I don't know if it's worth it or if it's necessarily the best move, but if they feel like they've exhausted every other option, then I understand that, certainly. And I think what I've sort of related it to is when you're training like a thoroughbred horse and you run them against other horses that on purpose lose, that's sort of what I feel like. If you get John Gray to AAA and you make him realize, yeah, I am so much better than everybody around me on a baseball field, then I think that does go a long way in rebuilding his confidence. But to send your opening day starter down to AAA, I know he's not the first guy to go down to AAA this year after starting on opening day. Kendall Graveman of the Oakland Athletics went down like in May.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think if John Gray comes back and we see 2016 and 2017 John Gray down the stretch, maybe you do credit this with what saved him this year. But right now it does feel somewhat risky.
Yeah, and we said this on the podcast before, said it on Twitter. It's all going to be about how John handles this situation. You know, if he goes down and he pouts and he's, you know, MF and everything, MF in the front office, MF and his teammates, you know, not being a good teammate to all those guys down there, not realizing what this whole thing was for in the long run, then you're going to have a big time problem on your hands. And it's going to potentially do long term damage to both his psyche, his talent, his relationship with the front office, with the Rockies. You know, it may be irreparable if he goes down and pouts. If he goes down and clears his head and says, all right, I can reset, I can get my confidence back, and he takes it that way, like we saw in his first start, I think he went six innings, gave up a couple runs, had a no-hitter into the fourth, had a couple of base hits as well. It was all good stuff. And so I think that was a good sign that he was able to do that well in the first game. But it really is going to be about his perception, because the thing with the advanced metrics and the standard metrics and the eye test is that sometimes they don't align. And John Gray's season, as we mentioned, is one of the most insane seasons, a very much unprecedented season than anybody has ever seen in the 150-year stretch of the game of professional baseball. Now, John Gray's ERA this season is very bad. It is 5.77. His fielding independent pitching is a career best 3.09. And that is what he can control, his walks, his strikeouts, homers, etc. 3.09, which is one of the biggest, one of the best marks in all of baseball for a fielding independent pitching. That disparity between the ERA and the FIP is 2.69, basically, between the two. That is the largest single season gap of any pitcher since 1900. And it's not even close. The next closest largest gap is 2.12 by Jack Knott of the 1936 St. Louis Browns.
It was that not is, good.
That is the kind of unprecedented we are talking here with John Gray and the season that he is having. And it's not just the ERA and the FIP. It is everything. The batting average on balls in play currently for John Gray, 391, one of the worst marks in baseball history for a guy with 90 innings in a year. I mean, it is. But you watch John Gray and you see the issues. You go, anybody else, I would say, oh yeah, he could use some time in AAA. He has trouble second time through the lineup. He has trouble in the first inning. He's, you know, gets guys on and falls apart. Things that normally you would see, you would look at that and the eye test and go, oh, you know, that guy might need a couple of weeks in AAA. But with John Gray, you don't want to do that because you know the stuff that he has, and he's able to do such amazing things. One of the best pitchers in Rockies history up to this point, with best starting pitchers for sure. So that's why it's so hard to really digest what is going on with John Gray this year. Because, like we said, the John Gray is an ace crowd and the John Gray is not an ace crowd are both right. And that's the problem.
Yeah, right now. I mean, I think the John Gray is an ace crowd is technically correct right now because he's certainly an ace in Albuquerque.
Yeah.
At this stage. And, he's an ace, just not where you want him to
be. And to be fair, they called up Antonio Senzatella, who had been pitching very, very well in AAA. He made his first start on Tuesday against the Giants, and he was pretty good. Seven shutout innings, no walks, three hits, four strikeouts, 95 pitches in that time. I mean, really, since John Gray was sent down the last five games, Rocky's starting pitching has allowed five runs on 16 hits in 41 innings.
Yeah.
That's a 1.10 ERA, a 1.18 opponent average. The only time a starter didn't go at least seven innings in that time was Chad Bettis' start on Sunday in Los Angeles when he left after three with a blister and now is currently on the disabled list. So the Rockies are enjoying their best run of pitching. And the most amazing in that time, they're going the distance, seven innings, eight innings in these games. No one's thrown more than 98 pitches in any of those starts.
Yeah, that's been really
they're efficient.
Encouraging.
They're not hurting themselves. They're getting strikeouts. They're limiting any kind of damage or traffic on the base paths. It is remarkable to see the turnaround, considering right before that, it was just a goddamn nightmare every single day, it seemed like, with the starting pitching, with the relief pitching. And for whatever reason, this stretch against two very good teams, the Dodgers and the Giants, they have figured it out in some way. And the only difference is John Gray's not in the clubhouse.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting. And they could almost make – no, they're not going to be able – well, they might be able to make it to the All-Star break. No, probably not. That stretch against Arizona and Seattle will force it. But right now they've only got four guys in the rotation because John Gray's down and Chad Bettis is on the DL. So even when you look at the depth chart on Rockies.com, Tyler Anderson, Ramon Marquez, Kyle Freeland, and Antonio Senzatella – I don't know who slots into that fifth spot right now. I mean,
they do have an off. They have an off day on Monday.
Yeah, they have an off day on Monday. They had an off day yesterday. We're recording this on Friday. So they could stretch it out for a little while, and maybe you get to the point where Chad Bettis has been on the DL for 10 days and you can get him back because that goes retroactive to, I believe, to Sunday. Was that move, and so maybe you can get Chad Bettis back. But that'll be interesting to see how they manage that down this last week and a half until the All-Star break. But yeah, right now, I mean, I certainly hope that correlation is not causation with John Gray going down to AAA and then all of a sudden everybody's pitching well in the rotation. But that has been really interesting to watch. And I mean, I think if all things go well for the Rockies, you get into the All-Star break and you've got nine games left from here. If you go 6-3 or 7-2 and you get yourselves back to four or five games over 500 before the All-Star break, then if John Gray has two, three dominant starts under his belt at AAA, you get him back up, maybe get Chad Bettis healthy, whatever it is, and you put together the best starting five that you have. And if Antonio Senzatella is part of that group,
okay,
I think you got to put him in that mix somewhere. I mean, Chad Bettis has not been super effective, and Bettis looked great, of course, in that start against the Dodgers and then leaves with the injury. But Chad Bettis, his numbers overall, Chad Bettis right now is a very good argument for why pitcher wins don't mean shit, because Chad Bettis is 5-1. He's got an ERA of 5.10. He had a great start against the Giants on the road on June 26th, but that ballpark is a joke, so anybody can pitch there, as we know. We're just going to flip the Coors logic on its head for AT&T every time we talk about it from now on. But prior to that, Chad Bettis had given up five or more earned runs in five straight starts. Five against the Giants on May 28th. Five against the Dodgers on June 3rd. Five against the D-backs on June 9th. Five against the Rangers on June 15th. Eight over 4 2/3 against the Mets on June 20th. His ERA over that span went from 3.30 to 5.23. Chad Bettis was not good in June, and he wasn't that good in May. May, he had a 5.28 ERA over five starts. June, it was 8.54. So I don't know if Chad Bettis is somebody who was long for this rotation. And
yeah, it's,
that's kind of tough because he's your only veteran, really.
And it's weird because the Antonio Senzatella start was the first time the Rockies started somebody in a game that wasn't in their initial starting five to begin the season. It was only the Rockies and the Astros who up to this point had used – five starting pitchers the entire season.
Yeah, which is pretty amazing.
For the Rockies? Didn't take an injury either. It took a demotion of their opening day starter of all things to get some new blood into the rotation.
Which is so weird. Of all of it, if that would have been the reason that you pointed out early as being the the thing that would finally force the Rockies into putting a sixth guy into the rotation. I don't think that would necessarily be the case.
That would not have been in my first 10 guesses.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I would say probably not. So the message that sends, do you think – I got this question the other day. Is there messaging in the move with John Gray? And I think in relation to the Nolan Arenado comments, which we'll talk about here in a minute.
What a segue.
I don't believe in messaging in sports the way the sports radio crowd does, because these are all grown adults. I think there is a certain amount that can be taken away from, you know, a big transaction, where I do believe in messaging in certain circumstances. It's like with Yoli Chacin being released a couple of years ago. When you think your job is on the line,
that's a message.
That's a message. But a struggling guy going down to AAA, I don't know how much I believe that's really a quote unquote message sent to the clubhouse. But in relation to the fact that it came right after Nolan Arenado made his comments, and Nolan, in an interview with Nick Groke of The Athletic, said, quote, "I just get pissed because I don't want to lose anymore. I've only been in the playoffs once, and it was only one game, and I really want more than that." Later on, he said, quote, "I'm tired of coming to the ballpark and losing. We work too hard as a group to experience that. I'm not saying I go home questioning, like, I don't like this place. I love it here, but yeah, I want to win. And the more we lose, the more if you lose all the time, nobody wants to be there." And I thought that was interesting. And Nick, I think, is a tremendous journalist. He has a very good ability to get guys to give quotes honestly about where they are in their mental state. And with Nolan, Nolan's an emotional guy, and Nolan is a guy who's going to put it out there. And I respect that about Nolan. I really respect that about Nick as a writer. And I thought it was very telling that Nick left in there kind of that stutter in the sentence where Nolan said, "The more we lose, the more if you lose all the time, nobody wants to be there." Because I don't know, I think what that leads you to believe, worst case scenario as a Rockies fan, is what he was going to say at the end of that is, "The more we lose, the more I want out." And you don't want to think that, but
yeah, I mean,
you know,
so I understand why Rockies Twitter got all up in arms about that quote, because, you know, you've seen you don't want to be a Matt Holliday situation, although it did yield Carlos Gonzalez and Houston Street for, you know, whatever. You don't want to be stuck in that situation where like the Orioles are right now with Manny Machado, a lame duck team with a superstar, and you're going to get nothing for him. You don't want that.
Yeah, that would not be fun.
I didn't take it umbrage with it, because what professional athlete wants to lose?
Exactly.
You know, like, you're a professional athlete. You've gotten to that point by being arguably the most competitive person you have ever been around up to a certain point. No professional athlete, considering how much work it took to get to that point, ever wants to lose.
Yeah.
So, but saying it, for some reason, is a bad thing. It makes it seem like, oh, well, he wants out, because, you know, we've seen this ownership group let franchise cornerstones go. We've also seen this ownership group keep guys for way too long. Todd Helton was kept for way too long. You know, Troy Tulowitzki was clearly given away at the right time. Matt Holliday was only there too long because the Rockies kind of panicked after the 08 season and they didn't want to lose him for nothing, so they traded him. And again, that trade turned out fairly well for the Rockies, I would say. You know, it sucks at the time. You know, there's a lot of ink spilled when those kind of things happen. Remember all the people who were literally crying about how Troy Tulowitzki being traded? I don't think anybody cares anymore. But save for like maybe three people.
That is definitely true.
I mean, it's hard to see a franchise cornerstone say they want to start winning again, but like at the same time, like, yeah, I'm sure everybody wants to win. I'm sure Brooks Pounders is sick of losing, you know,
exactly.
but nobody cares about his opinion. Sorry, Brooks, I don't know if you're listening. I don't mean that in a mean way, Brooks, like, you know, but, you know, Nolan Arenado is off to arguably the best start by any third baseman in MLB history.
Yep.
Won a Gold Glove every year, seems to be getting better every year. His plate discipline has improved this season. He's literally in the race for a triple crown. He's hitting .312. He's leading in home runs and runs batted in. He's top five in average in the National League. And yeah, he shouldn't want to keep losing. And I'm sure he sees that, you know, the bullpen, Brian Shaw blowing all these games, or the, you know, the starting pitching giving up 8 runs in the first. And he's just like, you know what? Like, I'm tired of this.
Yeah, I'm over this.
Like, and he's 27 years old. He is now in his sixth season.
Yeah.
I get it. He's been to the playoffs 1 year. That's true. The Rockies are rarely been a good team, even though he's been an MVP consideration each of the last 4 years. But since he's come in, they've won more than 75 games once. Like, those teams weren't necessarily built to win or built to be perennial winners, but at the same time, like, that wears on you as a professional athlete when you only know losing.
Yeah.
and you get a taste of winning, you don't want to go back.
No. And I don't have an issue with a guy saying this stuff. And I think especially the way people get so fired up and, you know, get angry at a reporter for bringing the quotes like that out. Nick didn't force Nolan to say that stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Like, and if
yeah.
Nolan is feeling that, I would rather have a guy who is open and communicative about where he is in relation to his team and to his organization. If the Rockies make it back from this and win the division right now, and yes, it's only been a week, right now that looks like a turning point in the organization in this 2018 season, because
yes,
there needs to be accountability. And the guy who needs to press accountability is Nolan Arenado, because he is the leader of this team.
I mean, you remember last year when he blew up on everybody in the Padres dugout?
Yeah.
You know, and he started screaming at everybody, and they, you know, because they were kind of lackadaisical on a couple of plays, and he started screaming at them in the dugout. The team played better after that. They looked to Nolan, because not only does he lead by example, he's got fire in him. I mean, you saw that 3-run homer he hit in that game on Monday, I believe. You know, it made it 6-0 against
yeah.
the Giants in a, you know, game in the third inning or fourth inning of a game. And he's coming home, he hits home plate, and he lets out like this primal scream.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay. Like, it didn't fit. You were like, wait, why? But then you realize he's pumped up. And, you know, Nolan's a bit of a squirrely guy anyway. He's not really you know, when he has interviews, when he, you know, is on the base paths, and he's always kind of jittery, it seems like, when he's
yeah.
talking to people, when he's, you know, interacting with people. And I think he wants to be that leader in that respect.
Yeah. I think if you had to define an emotional leader for a sports team, Nolan is the exact type of guy that you want, because
so
his
easy
heart
to look
is
at
always
him too,
in the right place.
Heart's in the right place. He's so good. He's one of the best ever to do it at his position, especially at his age. Like, he's got all the tools needed to be a great leader, and he's the guy that people will look to. Tulo had all those tools as a shortstop, but he wasn't a leader in that regard. He was a quiet guy. He didn't want
yeah.
to be that leader. Nolan wants to be that leader. That's not a knock on Tulo in that respect. Some guys don't want to be vocal
they
leaders.
They want to be unspoken leaders. And
Mike
that's
Trout
fine.
Mike Trout doesn't want to be a leader that way.
Yeah.
But he's maybe one of the best who's ever done it. But he doesn't want to be a leader. He doesn't want to be a superstar. He doesn't want to be in commercials like Bryce Harper does. You know, that,
yeah.
and that's okay. There's no wrong way to be a leader as long as you're good at it.
Yeah. I think Nolan, too, is, you know, Tulo, when things were going well, Tulo was never a font of energy. You never looked at Tulo as, when things go well, Nolan looks like a guy who's lighting up everybody around him. Tulo,
yes.
his play was great and his demeanor was even keeled, but Tulo was the type of guy who I think was very quick to wallow in the failures. And the successes were never good enough. And that's not a knock on Tulo. That's how a lot of perfectionists are. It's difficult
yeah.
to be happy and be accepting of things going well. And it's very easy to embrace and immerse yourself in things that aren't good enough.
We saw Tulo get too frustrated and hurt the team. Like when
yeah.
he smashed the bat down
yeah.
and sliced his palm, was out for 6 weeks. Like,
yeah.
cool, man. Like,
yeah.
Way to go, Hunter Strickland. Like,
right. And Nolan's the opposite of that, because Nolan, when things are going well, he is a firebrand. I mean, he's everything that you want in being able to ignite all of the players around him, all the front office members around him. He is a franchise guy in every sense of the word. He's got a $1 billion smile. He's got a good energy to himself. He's fun. He has fun playing the game. He loves the game more than I don't think I've ever seen a player who looks like he loves baseball more than Nolan Arenado.
Right. Yeah.
And that is contagious. And it's not just contagious to the guys around you. That's contagious to a fan base. That's contagious to national media members. That one of my favorite things, and we've talked about this for years now, but one of my favorite things is I watch the opposing feed, as most people who follow us on Twitter know. I watch the opposing team's feed of most broadcasts because I like listening to different broadcasters. And the way every single broadcast team gushes about Nolan when their teams are playing the Rock, every single
right.
team, even the teams that we complain about the way their broadcasters treat the Rockies, the Giants broadcasters can never stop talking about Nolan Arenado.
He's even transcended the Coors meme.
Yeah,
like,
basically.
People realize that he's that good no matter where he is.
Yeah.
And it's hard for a Rockies player to do that. Tulo never really got around that. He got a little bit. Helton never really got around that. Like, Nolan Arenado has transcended Coors. People know who Nolan Arenado is and how good he is.
Yep. He is really the first player to break through and do that on a national level. The other day, they're playing in Los Angeles. Justin Turner makes a barehanded play to get, I think it was Ian Desmond at first. And Charlie Steiner called Justin Turner Arenado-like with that play. Well, he's yeah. Arenado-like because well, for whatever yeah. reason, the National League West old guys refuse to pronounce Nolan's name correctly.
Hey, girl, are you Charlie Steiner? It's one of the greatest tweets.
Arenado-like with that play, though. And, like, you would never hear the Rockies team compare a Rockies player to another guy because it's just not their style in comparing the other guy as being better.
It would be an inside joke somewhere. Yeah.
That's how much respect Nolan commands. Nolan is the gold standard for everything. And there was Charlie Steiner was also talking about during Nolan's rookie season. I did not remember this at all, but during Nolan's rookie season, apparently Juan Uribe had a terrific year at third base for the Dodgers, and Dodgers fans, as Charlie Steiner related it, were incensed that Juan Uribe did not win the gold glove at third base. And Steiner's point was basically, as long as Nolan Arenado is in the National League and is healthy, nobody's winning the gold glove. It's not Nolan Arenado.
True.
Which is true. But he is, and it's kind of crazy to say this stuff about Nolan because he is still so young. Nolan's 27. And just turned 27 in April. Like, he's still pretty young as far as a career goes. Nolan still has, theoretically, I mean, if he's Adrian Beltre, he's got another 15 years in his career. But as a productive major league third baseman, Nolan's at least got another decade in his career. Unless he catches Garrett Atkins.
God willing, another decade. Yeah.
Well, God willing, another decade if he signs an extension. If not, I don't really care how productive he is.
Yes.
But he is, at this stage in his career, I think Nolan is a bigger and better bet as a long-term franchise luminary to lock up than Todd Helton was, than Troy Tulowitzki was, than Carlos Gonzalez was. I think right now, if you lock Nolan up long-term, he is your future greatest player in franchise history. And I don't even know how much longer down the road he has to go to be called that.
I don't think very far.
Yeah. Todd Helton offensively sustained it for so long, but then Todd Helton fell off a cliff at the end of his career offensively. Defensively, Todd Helton was always great. He also played a much less challenging defensive position.
Larry Walker was great, but he didn't have a long peak with the Rockies.
And a 9-year career, whatever it was, with the Rockies, and was always hurt. And Troy Tulowitzki played a more demanding position, but again, injury issues left under, you know, kind of dubious and sort of ugly circumstances. So I don't think you look at anybody else. If the Rockies are able to lock up Nolan and turn this window of contention into a legitimate couple of seasons where they're making the playoffs, then I think Nolan is already on the way to being the, if you're going to make a Mount Rushmore of one player from each of the Denver area's four major sports teams, Nolan's your guy for the Rockies.
Yeah, I believe so. I think you're absolutely right. And I think I know they did the Rockies Rushmore thing, whatever that was, 2011, 2012, and it was Todd, Tulo, Cargo, and Ubaldo.
which is, as we discussed last week.
Amazing that Cargo is the one that's still there. Yeah.
So I like Nolan's comments. I like that Nolan was the one to come out and have the, try to light a fire under everybody's asses. But I think the Rockies, I think that sends a message that if you want to keep this guy around, you sure as hell better play well going into the break, and you sure as hell better make some moves at the deadline to make this into a playoff team.
Yep.
Because right now, they haven't looked like a playoff team for the first, and yes, they are now finally back over 500. But this is a team that's 87 games into the season. They are one game over 500. If you're going to win this division, it looks like right now, the National League West could very well be one at 86-76. Like, it's not a great division as of right now, but you've got to be able to do something to get yourselves to that point. And I don't think, Brian Shaw is progressing in his rehab and will be throwing on Friday and Sunday in Albuquerque. I don't think that's going to do it. You know, Adam Ottavino is not been bad lately, but has struggled a little bit more than, well, I guess when you don't struggle at all for the first, you know, 12 weeks of the season, having like 1 week of kind of having hiccups is like, what's wrong with Adam Ottavino? His ERA is now 1.5.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, Wade Davis, like I tweeted the other day, Wade Davis like has Brian Fuentes syndrome. He can't make it easy on himself. He gets two quick outs the other day on the 4th of July, walks back-to-back hitters. So it's like, they're going to, if they are serious about this season and they are serious about contending, the accountability and the competitiveness, they have to go into the All-Star break on a good roll. They have to come out of it on a good roll, and then they've got to make a splash of some kind. Because that's what's going to keep Nolan around. If this team flounders and they struggle, I don't think Nolan is the type of guy to shut himself off and go into this offseason and just look at the money that Bryce Harper and Manny Machado bring in and think, all right, I'm going to cash in next year. But I think it looks vastly more appealing for Nolan to sign here long term and maybe take a little bit less money, but, you know, have that stability in his career if the Rockies win a division this year, if the Rockies are a team that is able to get past the NLDS, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
That makes you look like, okay, this is what I want. I want to be the greatest player in franchise history here.
Yep.
So
I'm with you.
Lord willing. Good Lord willing.
115 now here. 115.
Good God almighty. Whoa. Whoa.
I think the low is supposed to be like 90 tonight.
That is insane.
Oh, it's going to be cold tomorrow. It's going to be 104.
Oh, man. You might as well get your sweaters out.
That's what I'm saying.
Probably should.
So it's like, you know what? Like, my wife is from Phoenix. Like, this is how it is every day there. Like, and I don't know how they do it. And she's always like, oh, well, your house is air conditioning, your car is air conditioning, your job is air conditioning. I'm like, yeah, well, what if the house doesn't have air conditioning right now?
Yeah. Because
that's where we're sitting, and it's not great. I'm like, it's like a Bikram yoga studio in my living room right now.
It is really hot in here. Well, it's hot yoga. Does it have to be this hot? the feeling of just not being able to escape heat is like one of the most miserable feelings.
Because like,
you can put on extra clothes if
you're
layers. Cold. Yeah. Like, you'll still be cold, but you can put on extra layers and at least like try to fight it. Yeah,
you don't want to know how little I'm wearing right now.
Ew, gross.
I'm not naked because it's a leather couch. You don't want to be naked on a leather couch, but, you know.
I think your wife doesn't want you naked on a leather couch.
No one wants to be naked on a leather couch. Have you ever been naked on a leather couch before? It's terrible. Great. Things just sticking everywhere, especially when it's hot.
That sounds disgusting.
It's not great. Yeah,
yeah. I don't blame you. But I also don't want to know what all you have.
No, you don't.
I don't want to know at all. We got a really, really, really good question in for Ask PDP the other day, but I can't remember what it was, and it was not hashtagged Ask PDP.
Nice job.
I don't know if I can find it. So I need you to go on like a monologue while I search for it.
It was the best of times. It was the blurst of times. You stupid monkey.
Here, man.
Let me just sing the entire score from the HMS Pinafore.
Please do. Please do. Man, I haven't been on Twitter hardly at all lately.
Well, bless your heart.
Craig Goldstein was like in a beef with somebody in our mentions who was being annoying. Craig was not being annoying. The other person was being annoying. We had like a fairly long time follower try to explain the grammar of tacos to us, like as though we're not, as though you didn't major in English and I'm not a journalist.
And I was like, come on, man. Like, and it was
just
something
just
that,
now
that
joining
we've
this
known for like, we've known following us for like ever. Like, it was so weird. Like, yeah, very God, weird. Dude. Like,
I found it.
Hooray.
I found it. Our good buddy Ryan Tarletsky.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Ryan said, quote, question for the next pod. Would you rather see the Rockies miss the playoffs every year till the day you die and then win the World Series the next year, or throw BP to the Rockies for a full year without an L screen and no glove?
So
I gotta go BP.
Yeah. So
I'm assured that I'm not gonna suffer like a horrific brain injury.
But even then, it's like, so the point is like, you watch the Rockies every year and then you die and then they win like in your honor. Like, is that what we're talking about?
No. And you know, the belief system that I think the both of us carry, it's not like we're going to be floating around somewhere like, oh, thank God they finally won.
Like Cubs fans who died in October of 2016.
Yeah. I will say, you know, and we have discussed many times how I didn't think anything could be worse than the Chicago Cubs winning the World Series, and then the election happened right after that. But the Cubs, that made me so miserable watching those people be happy. But I will say, this makes me emotional even to think about it now. The New York Times did an article about, there's the wall outside of Wrigley Field where people were writing in chalk memorials to their relatives who had passed away, and the Cubs didn't win a World Series. And they told a story about one guy, and I'm sure this was more than just one person, but one guy who took a six-pack of Old Style in a lawn chair and went and listened to Game 7 at his father's grave.
Yeah.
That to me was like, that still makes me want to bawl. That's like the most beautiful thing I could ever imagine. However, I don't want my son doing that. I want to celebrate with him.
Yeah.
I don't have any yet, but I would assume by the time the Rockies ever win a World Series, my kids will probably be in their 50s.
Yeah.
And, my now unborn kids will be in their 50s. And so I, you know, that's where I would say I would throw the BP. I also think it would be difficult to throw. If you try throwing baseballs on a regular basis with no glove, the mechanics of it feel so weird.
True.
To not be like, it's one thing if you're just throwing out a ceremonial first pitch. If you're doing the Adam Caton Holland, you're just throwing out a first pitch. That's one thing. You throw one thing. But like, if you're trying to throw baseballs repeatedly, it's weird to do it without a glove on.
Yeah.
I'm miming it right now as though you can all see me.
Oh, yeah. I can definitely see you. I'm doing it, too. Naked in my house.
We also got a question from Sean Marshall. This was after the Ask PDP episode that we did last week. Very shortly after we answered all those questions, he said, what's your take on Tulo not showing up for the 25th anniversary event this past weekend? He's not active, so he could have made it. I think he probably could have made it, but I don't think it would have been Tulo style at all to be under contract with another team. And even though he's injured to show up, I don't think there's any way that Tulo would have
done that. And that's not cool if you're the Blue Jays. I don't know.
Like, I don't think that would have been.
I didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, me neither.
Like he sent a video, which is more than I expected from him, to be honest.
Oh, I didn't even see that. Yeah, that's.
I thought he did, at least. I didn't see. I wasn't there, obviously. But like, I thought that he had like a hey guys, what's up? I'm Tulo. How you doing?
My legs fell off.
my legs were heavy and then they fell off.
Poor Tulo. Wah wah. What else were we gonna talk about?
I don't know. I'm about to get a mirror delivered here.
A mirror. Putting it above the bed. Ayo.
Right on the ceiling.
there was one piece of news as of a short time ago. The Colorado Rockies will see two of their players put on the rosters of the Futures Game squads. Brendan Rodgers, the Rockies' top prospect, the shortstop slash second baseman, will play in a second consecutive Futures Game. And Jesus Tinoco, who was acquired in the Troy Tulowitzki trade.
Boy, our segues are awesome today.
They're so good. They're so good. Jesus Tinoco was terrible in the 2016 season. They acquired him in 2015, was terrific between Asheville and Lancaster, or Lansing that year in the Blue Jays organization. Then in 2016 was just awful. 3-11 with a 6.86 ERA and 20 starts between Asheville and Modesto, back when the Rockies were still in Modesto. Last year, they completely broke down his delivery over the offseason. He jumped back in, and at the hitter-friendliest park in minor league baseball, put up a 4.67 ERA with Lancaster, which is pretty good. The command, still a little bit of an issue. He walked 50 in 140 and two-thirds innings. This year, he hasn't been great, which is why I found this kind of an interesting selection. He's got an ERA of almost 5.5 in 16 starts for Hartford. But Jesus Tinoco, still not a very old guy. He's 23. And the Rockies still have some pretty high hopes for him, so that's pretty cool. Brendan Rodgers, I would imagine that the time is running very low on Brendan Rodgers in AA.
It should, yeah.
We've talked about this. The AA All-Star Game, he was selected to the AA All-Star Game, which is coming up on July 11th in Trenton, New Jersey, the Eastern League All-Star Game, I should say. The Tim Tebow All-Star Game. Tim Tebow, Eastern Division representative for the All-Star Game with a OPS just barely over 700 for the season. 80 games so far this year. 277, 341, 518 is the slash line for Brendan Rodgers. I would think, since the AA Eastern League and the AAA All-Star Games, which is a combined game between the International League and the Pacific Coast League, they're on the same day, and then the Futures Game is right after that, Futures game is that following weekend, the 16th or 15th, I think. I would think Brendan Rodgers that following week will probably just go right to AAA. That would be my guess.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing left for him to prove in AA, I don't think. Yeah.
Unless he's still working on defensive stuff, which is what held him back in Lancaster for a little while last year. But I think the Rockies have been pretty pleased with what they've seen from him defensively now, ever since he's, you know, gotten adjusted to second. He's played at third some. So I would think that move is probably coming pretty soon. So if you're in Albuquerque, just keep an eye out for that, because that could be coming your way in relatively short order. And yes, as of a couple of days ago, according to our pal Thomas Harding at MLB.com, quote, Rockies right-hander Brian Shaw accelerated his return with a batting practice session on Wednesday, and he will begin a rehab assignment for AAA Albuquerque on Friday and Sunday. And if you're like the rest of us who have watched Brian Shaw this year, you're thinking, don't accelerate anything. Take your time. It's fine.
Yeah, we're fine. Scott Obrey's been actually pitching really well.
Yeah. Like, Shaw was put on the DL with a right calf strain on June 24th, and so is already eligible to return, but he'll rehab starting on Friday and then pitch again on Sunday. But Scott Oberg has been good. Chris Russen has actually looked okay in recent outings. So the way this roster is managed down the stretch is going to be interesting, with, like we said, right now, four rotation members and an extra guy on the bench position player-wise. They're carrying like 19 guys on the bench position player-wise these days. I don't know. Ryan McMahon is still down in AAA, and Pat Vliet is back up on the major league roster, but
it's cool. Whatever. We're all going to die anyway. I might die today. I don't know.
You might die today.
115 degrees. Yeah,
the
I might.
The sun is eventually going to burst and swallow us all, but that might just happen to you today.
It's right now it's 85 inside my house, and it's surprised it's not worse.
You don't have a basement because it's California.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Ugh. Ugh.
Yep.
God, gross.
Yep.
Well, that's terrible.
Thanks.
last thing before we get out of here, what was this app that you tweeted me a screenshot from today?
That was from Skype.
Oh, was it really?
Yes.
Oh, weird. Anthony tweeted a screenshot of me, and it said, Anthony, comma, your friend Tyler Mon misses you, which is ironic that it would come from Skype, because you're literally one of two people I talk to on Skype ever.
You're the only one I talk to on Skype.
like, what? We talk every week on this app.
Yeah.
On this program. What are you talking about, Skype?
It says, your friend Tyler Mon misses you. Like,
and who authorized you to make this lie on my behalf? I'm actually going to tweet that right now.
I don't understand. It's so weird of all things.
Yeah, very strange. Very strange. But I do miss you, buddy, and I don't want you to die.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Not even a little bit.
Appreciate
Unless
that.
Unless it's me.
Let's set my own hand.
Your end. Yeah. So that'll do it for this week's episode. Your Colorado Rockies on the road tonight at the Seattle Mariners, an 8:10 Mountain Time start, and then day games each of the next 2 days. 2:10 start Saturday, 2:10 start on Sunday. Back home on Tuesday to take on the Arizona D-backs for a 3-game set, and then home against the American League Rockies on the 13th, 14th, and 15th as the Mariners visit town. Let's hope for a lot of Josh Fogg performances in Seattle.
Yeah, a lot of like facing the minimum hour 52-minute games. Yeah.
Let's do
cool.
that.
Let's do it.
That was a fun one. Everybody will be the Dragon Slayer this weekend for your Colorado.
Sragan Delayer.
At Seattle. Josh Fogg, that game was June 30th.
2006?
1 hour and 52 minutes.
Yep.
What? That is absurd. They won that game 2-0. Losing pitcher in that game. Did not remember this.
Jamie Moyer.
Former Rockies legend.
I remember I was driving down from I was in Powell that summer because I was working to build up some money for my study abroad trip in Italy.
Okay.
And I was driving down to see some friends in Denver, and I was listening to it in the car ride down. And, you know, the game started. I started driving at 4:00. The game started at 8:00. And by the time I got to Denver, the game was already over. And it's like a 7.5-hour drive.
You know, what's kind of funny is I remember where I was when that game happened. And now I'm going to have to tweet and ask people if they remember where they were for that game. But I was working at a bowling alley in college. And I remember like taking my phone out of my pocket and being like, oh, it must be like the 6th inning there. And it was like final score from Seattle 2-0. And I was like, what the hell? How did that happen?
Yeah.
Very strange. Herman Marquez, go be Josh Fogg tonight. Channel your inner Josh Fogg.
Carl Everett played in that game for Seattle.
Holy cow. Dinosaur denying Carl Everett.
Dinosaur denier Carl Everett. Wow, that's amazing.
Oh my God, that's incredible. All right. Well, I guess that'll do it. Go, I don't know, put a bunch of ice in a bath.
I might.
Do something like that.
Yeah, I might.
It's fun. Stay cool, buddy.
Thanks, friend.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week. Love you.
Bye.